But one factor that may happen is the religious. Unless during their years of formation, they are also given obediences by those in charge of their spiritual life on things having to do with the spiritual life. Once, call it the counseling direction, is withdrawn, they may lack the support which they had before. They're on their own. Or the superior tells them to do something, and they pay no attention. Now what I'm saying here is not as obvious as may seem. There are areas and aspects of obedience which are, I don't say none of the business, but not much of the business of those in charge of formation. Details that have to do with the running of the community, finances, and so on. But those in charge of formation, for example, have a right to tell a particular religious, I think you should, say, use another form of prayer. I think you should not practice this mortification. Or I think you should practice. Do I have to? If they ask that, well, then be ready with the answer. Yes. Why? Well, in a showdown, because my dear, whatever you call her, I am not just your spiritual counselor. I also have authority. Does that make sense? Because often the confessors are approached and with a few minutes at their disposal, not knowing the person. The individual may ask permission to perform some penance. If it's minor or trivial, no problem. Say it's a major one. Keeping night watch after the community goes to bed. Well, that raises a few problems. Like a creaking bed and other things which can interfere with the running of the community. Or, for example, abstinence at table. Or just diet in general, which can affect the health. You can't just trust, and I don't mean just even the very young ones, but in general, the individual, him or herself, to know what is best. And the priest of the confessional, no, that is the sacrament. But he is not divinely inspired. He depends on the graces that God gives him. But often, the priest may be asked to supply all the authority that should have been exercised by those in charge of formation. Does this add up? So that later on, religious will be going to confessor for certain things. Now, as one who does these sort of things, I think it's wonderful, and I think they should approach the confessor. But those in charge of formation also have authority in virtue of their delegated position in charge of formation. They're not just in charge of information. They are in charge of formation. So much for that. How to direct religious who are not, or a person is not, communicative. What's the problem? Well, there are really several problems. The basic problem, of course, is, the very human one, is unless the person communicates, you don't know him. In other words, uncommunicative people do not reveal themselves. And the first law of formation is information. If you first have been informed about the person, you can be directing, but may not be the person to whom you are directing your ideas. What is the first thing I recommend? The first thing I suggest is to find out why the person is not communicative. Is it shyness? Is it fear? Is it something habitual? Don't jump to the conclusion that because a person is not communicative to you, they are uncommunicative. You may be, pardon me, such an iceberg, you'd freeze anybody into silence. I know I'm not speaking to anybody here. I'm just talking in general. Some people freeze us, isn't that true? You get all kinds of thoughts, but nothing comes. Is it pride? People may be uncommunicative because they're afraid of being humiliated by whatever they say. They've been told whatever you say will be held against you. They want to be safe. It may be ignorance. Now this took me years to discover. Some people don't talk much because they don't have much to say. God bless them. Good people. They just don't have much to say. Makes sense, doesn't it? Of course, there are others who will talk of Lustre, who also have nothing to say. This may be plain honesty. Other people are not communicated because they're shrewd. Speech is like the body. It can be used to maneuver one's way with other people. They will say only four words because five would be too much until they know how you feel. Then you respond, then they'll give you the fifth word. You say something and then they will give you two more words. With many people, conversation is like a game of chess. This you should know. And finally, and this may be humiliating to you, people are selective. Whom they communicate what to. They may not fully trust you. Either they cannot fully rely on your good judgment or on your sense of honesty or your integrity. There are people to whom you've got to prove yourself. Don't jump to the immediate conclusion. Their non-communicability is a fault in them. It may be a defect in you.
I don't know if you mentioned, but can I be satisfied, though, if I do have someone who is non-communicative to me, and say it might be one out of a group, that it's something in me, but as long as I know he is communicating to someone else for spiritual direction or whatever, can I be satisfied with that?
No. I would at least say not fully satisfied. And the reason is because if you're supposed to be directing, you've got to have some compass. The least a person should be able to show you is what is north, south, east, and west. they've got to manifest enough about themselves to know where you're going. I would say no. Because it may well be that their willingness to communicate to somebody else is precisely because, you know, that other person does not have the authority over them which you have. You know, entrusting ourselves to anyone is a risk. And it's the greater risk the more rights the person has over me, because knowledge can be used as a weapon. And it's a very mysterious thing. Some people we are easy, on easy terms, and other people we find it much harder to communicate. I think the first thing that a person in charge of formation with St. Paul to try to be all things to all people, because some people find it hard to communicate just because it's you. Assuming the person is sincerely and legitimately non-communicative, what to do? So first then, setting the problem as we've just described it. Assuming, however, that the person is honestly not communicative, there's nothing emotional or wrong, it's just that's the kind of a person he or she is. First, try to adjust to such people. In other words, it will take humility on our part to find out what they want to talk about, what approach they would like, because instinctively we try to cut everyone to our own shape and size. When a person does not communicate, we are tempted to say, even if we don't, imperative, communicate, speak, exclamation mark. And if she doesn't, there must be something wrong with her. It may just possibly be there's something wrong with me, that I have not adjusted myself to that person. For example, using a blustering voice. The other person is the gentle, soft-spoken. Well, if that person is to communicate, you cannot shout at the person. You must be soft-spoken and as adjustable as possible. Second, in order to train people in the art of communication, give every person who enters your life, especially if he or she is in training, give them every chance to communicate. Sometimes people don't realize they talk too much. They, in effect, might be telling us, pause or be silent so I can say something. Third, for many people, writing what is on their minds helps. There are some people who just cannot put certain things in verbal communication. They must have it in writing, or they will go just so far and no further, finding it not only difficult but psychologically even impossible to put some things on paper. Others, on the other hand, find it easier to put things on paper than to talk about it. So, writing may help. And this I recommend to all superiors and those in charge of formation have over the years, to encourage the religious under their charge to write to them. But we're in the same house. Sure, you're in the same house. No, we don't put a stamp on the envelope. But to to give them a chance to put something on paper, which, by the way, is also not a bad way for a busy superior to maybe put something on paper for those under his or her care. We had a superior in Cincinnati. Every morning, the first thing we did after breakfast was to look in our mailboxes. Because we always, not everybody, but there are about 40 men in the community. I'd see a good average would be 10 to 15 notes. We call them Billy Dudes. That means billet doux, sweet, sweet notice. Well, some of those notices were not that sweet. He would bawl us out. He would correct what we were doing. He'd remember all of our birthdays. We'd get a little note wishing you a happy birthday. I had charge of the debaters, and I didn't even know the rector knew I had a debate squad. But whenever we won, and of course it made a lot of difference to me, congratulations, you find out. So writing does help for communication, both ways. Fourth, watch people's actions, gestures, and even their facial expressions. I'm not suggesting getting a book. There are books on the subject, body language. All I'm saying is that the person you think is not communicating may be communicating much more than you think. All you have to do is know the vocabulary of gesture, the way they speak, the way they brighten up, or the way they frown. In any case, communication is not only by the spoken word. Fifth, people who are not communicative, there may be exceptions. But I would say they should all be recommended and encouraged to communicate more than perhaps they're doing with God. I really believe that the failure to communicate the way people should is a moral failure, and that it can be immensely improved, if not cured, by communication in prayer about the things that are on a person's mind. Which may mean for some people a reassessment of their manner of praying. Because, as you know, in communities where there's a great deal of vocal prayer and very little mental prayer, or even when in mental prayer the community follows a certain pattern and it's assumed that everybody meditates on the same subject, well, it's understandable there are things people would like to talk about with God, but they have not got into the habit of doing so. So, the more they communicate with God, the more communicable they become with others. That's a good general rule. I've used it for years, and people have come back and thanked me for the recommendation. Now, the communicating with God, I don't mean merely reciting prayers, which have their place. I mean especially opening one's heart to God and sharing with Him whatever is on my mind, no matter how humiliating or embarrassing or trivial. We should tell ourselves, if it interests me, it interests God. If it concerns me, God wants to be involved. He cares. Nothing is too trivial to share with God. And finally, this has to be done prudently, but it should be done. In counseling souls, which is so much part of my life. It is, I believe, necessary to share some confidences with a person whose life I am somehow directing. Because, as we've been saying all along, if we can hardly direct persons whom we don't know, and if the people are not communicative, especially about things which perhaps they would be embarrassed to tell the one in charge of formation, remember this, that there is only one form of communication which the Church protects by the most solemn canonical sanctions, and that is the sacrament of penance. And therefore, confidentiality, about which we've spoken, is no doubt one inhibiting factor, the fear of the breach of confidentiality on the part of many, especially the young. Remember, this is new to them, and consequently they must be absolutely sure, as far as it is humanly possible, that what they tell the one who is in charge of their lives, that he or she will keep, as they say, a secret. In any case, if I want to encourage another to share confidences with me, now watch what I'm saying. I am not saying we are to prod or probe. Least of all, are we to put any pressure on the person to divulge what they would rather not divulge, because there are within the Church other persons and other means, notably, of course, the sacrament of confession, in which the person may and indeed should make a total self-manifestation. Now, when clerical religious orders, where priests are superiors, or the novice directors, as my own, are priests, it is less important, though still useful, about what I'm talking about here, because there's a kind of a built-in openness that, provided the priest at all relates to the penitent, there will be a communication. But short of that, and generally it is not that situation. It is imperative, carefully and prudently, but definitely, to not hesitate to share something about my own life, which is not common knowledge, with a person from whom I wish to invoke some kind of confidential response. Confidence begets confidence. If then, prudently, and I have to repeat that word, if I share with another person what is on my mind, maybe part of my past life or my present life, prudently, that will tell the person that they're not merely being probed or examined, that what they're telling you, they are sharing with you, because you, to some extent, have shared yourself with them. Of course, prudence is the watchword. All I know is through years now of experience that when I speak, even publicly, I say things that people might sometimes wonder, my goodness, why does he talk about that in public? Well, because, and if, and I just hope that it's verified in my life, we must be very selective in what we share with other people. I would almost describe it as a definition of prudence, of knowing whom I will share what with. It's impossible, it would be madness, to tell people everything. It would be also useless to try to direct others unless I am willing to reveal myself. So that self-revelation should be carefully thought out daily. I examine my conscience daily on whom, and if I anticipate, whom I'm going to tell how much to. And what a difference this kind of anticipation will win you, in the good sense, many friends, because that's what Christ said, didn't he, to the apostles? Why did Christ say, I call you my friend, Sister Rita Rose? Why did Christ tell the disciples that you are my friend? Because I've shared with you what the Father has told me, what I knew from all eternity in the bosom of the Trinity. I now, this is Christ speaking as man, am sharing with you, and there are no stronger ties than this.